There's a great Martin Luther King quote, one of my favorites, where he says that power without love is reckless and abusive, and love without power is anemic and sentimental.
That's Jacqueline Novogratz. For the last 2 decades, she's been working to bring together love and power through an unusual combination of charity and free market incentives. As the founder and CEO of Acumen Fund, Novogratz has funded projects in Africa, India, and other impoverished areas. She's also written a book called The Blue Sweater, Bridging the Gap Between Rich and Poor in an Interconnected World. Novogratz says we can't just rely on capitalism to fight poverty. It's a lesson she learned the hard way when she worked in corporate banking.
I was working mostly in Latin America during the international banking crisis of the early 1980s, and saw that while we were writing off hundreds of millions of dollars of bad loans, that low-income and middle-income people couldn't get access to borrowing whatsoever. And certainly with low-income people, they were worried and wouldn't even go into the doors of the banks. And so I actually approached my boss at the time and suggested quite innocently, but with a real sense of idealism, that maybe we should start lending to low-income people and lower-middle-income people because they might keep the money in the country, and this was in Brazil, and also probably repay us. He kind of pat me on the head, and it was a moment of real truth where I realized that if I wanted to experiment or explore that, I would have to leave. And so I left Wall Street and ended up moving to first West Africa and then Central Africa in Rwanda.
How did it happen for you? In the story you tell in the book, The Blue Sweater, it sounds as though it was your experiences in Rwanda, perhaps, that changed things the most for you. And that started before the civil war there, right?
Yes. I first went to Rwanda in 1986. I helped these 6 women start a microfinance bank, and simultaneously we built a bakery. I built a bakery with another group of women on the side. During the genocide, of course, I couldn't imagine what had happened to everyone, nor to the institutions. And I went back in 1996, 2 years later, and discovered that the women who helped form the bank had played out every conceivable role of genocide, including being killed, as well as including being major perpetrators. The bakery had been demolished. The bank, however, because it was a local institution built and run by local women based on a sustainability model, was still there. Yeah. And in fact, it's still there today. And so the lessons I took from that was, again, that dignity is more important to the human spirit than wealth. And if we could build systems that allow people to participate, we will see more change. That we need to build local institutions. Institutions matter. And that there's a place between charity and the market, we call it patient capital, that really works. What we do now with Acumen Fund is similar to what was happening 20 years ago with microfinance, thinking about systems like bringing water and healthcare and housing to low-income people where markets don't exist. And so we need charity. We need philanthropic money, but not just to hand out, not just to build a house for someone or provide their health care for free, but to experiment with building real economic models, systems that enable low-income people to pay prices they can afford and recognize that you need subsidies so that ultimately they can get what it is they need to thrive as human beings.
The combination is what's interesting, isn't it? Because there are a lot of people who say that what you're doing is anti-philanthropic, but that's not the case at all. You're saying there is a juncture between philanthropy and this kind of patient capitalism.
That's right. And so often what the country needs are examples of a success. What the country needs is an increasing belief in possibility. And so Acumen Fund helped facilitate a technology transfer from Sumitomo in Japan into Arusha, Tanzania, to build the first manufacturing capacity for this new long-lasting insecticide-impregnated malaria bed net. No bank, again, would invest in this new technology. No charity was going to lend to a for-profit company, but we would, because we believed in using this mix. And today, A to Z Manufacturing, because we bet on a great entrepreneur, employs 7,000 people, mostly very low-income women, who are producing 20 million bed nets a year that provide coverage to 40 million individuals across the continent of Africa against malaria every year. So I bring someone into that factory, and they forget just for a moment that they're in East Africa. And that's powerful.
Well, one of the things you haven't even mentioned is the effect of the use of those bed nets in preventing disease, which has its own spreading effect.
Absolutely. And in fact, I've been visiting this one man, Elia Rahimu, for about 5 years now. And I literally have watched the Lazarus effect. I've watched him go from making about $6 a month, primarily as a beggar, living in a mud hut, to one of the last times I visited him, seeing a mattress on his mud floor that he had purchased from the income he made because he's not sick all the time and he could work. And I asked him how old he was, and shockingly, he said he was 66, first time ever that he had a pillow on which to lay his head. Transformed human being from a single $10 investment. And it's that kind of change that we're starting to see. And that's where the conversation needs to get more nuanced around, are we looking at philanthropy? Are we looking at business? You know, you take another example like maternal health care, where in India, you're 250 times more likely to die in childbirth than you are in Sweden, for instance. And the government clinics are, for the most part, filthy and frightening. LifeSpring, which is a joint venture between Acumen and the Indian government, has created a for-profit hospital system, but again, owned by two nonprofit entities who just want to see their costs covered, that's now building a new hospital every 35 days. And to go into the early hospitals, they are so over capacity now that they have to have big waiting rooms outside with umbrellas for the women to avoid heat, where the women are waiting either to be checked or to have their babies. And it's incredibly joyful to see.
You're really talking about an entirely new way of thinking about philanthropy, finding a way to apply business principles to touch real lives. There's an ethics to making foreign aid effective, isn't there?
There's an ethics component to the way we need to think about the change that we're making or are not making, and a sense of urgency that we need to integrate more fully into our action, because certainly the people that we're trying to serve feel that way. There's this extraordinary woman, Dora, who runs a clinic, which is part of an 82 franchise system in rural and urban areas in Kenya. And she works in one of the toughest slums, Kibera slum. And during the riots, not last January, but the January before, the entire international community fled the slums. And so these international NGOs that had been running the small health clinics were gone just at the moment that boys were being macheted and people were being killed. They were so needed. Well, Dora never left the clinic. She stayed there 24 hours a day, even though she's not from the slum. And when we asked her where she got the courage, she said, well, these people are my customers. And I knew if I left, they would never come back to me. And I was worried they would burn down my clinic because not only was she not from the slum, but she was from the wrong tribe. So she stayed in her clinic and she served her neighbors and the boys who were, and girls, who were wounded during the riots. And at one point, a group of hooligans did come to burn down her clinic, and her customers created a human phalanx around the clinic and protected her throughout. And so we learned so much from the doors of the world, again, around using philanthropy, but thinking about the dignity of the human spirit, recognizing that what she wants is not a whole bunch of handouts. What she wants is to really be able to grow her clinic so that she can reach, you know, everyone. This is a slum of over a million people. And for that, she needs patient capital. She needs management assistance. She needs access to the drugs that people need and desire and will pay for.
That's Jacqueline Novogratz, founder and CEO of Acumen Fund. Her book is called The Blue Sweater, Bridging the Gap Between Rich and Poor in an Interconnected World.